Dear listener, we accept the fact that you have to sacrifice a whole hour to listen to whatever it is we're about to do wrong, and what we will do is wrong. You see us the way you want to see us, in the simplest of terms, in the most convenient definitions, but we found out that each one of us is a brain.
An athlete.
A princess.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Geek Movie Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Movie Club, Episode 5, the podcast that recommends all men should date women with small hands. I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David Longo.
How are you, boys?
Small hands.
Small hands.
Like, smells like cabbage.
That recommendation actually comes from a friend of mine who will remain nameless, but that was the advice from his father. When he was a teenager, said, "Son, always date a woman with small hands."
Son, I used to change it. Always date a woman with small hands. Always,
if you ever travel back in time, don't touch anything.
He said, "Always date a woman with small hands. It'll make your dick look big." Hmm. All right, so you know, I know that was his advice to his teenage son, and all I can say is classy.
Thanks, Dad.
So what was fatherly advice for you, Richard?
I've never met my father. Oh, really?
And don't I feel small? Well, if it makes you feel any better, I only met my father much later in life and much too late for fatherly advice. Longo, any advice from your dad when you were young?
If a nuclear blast happens, just put your head down.
Wow, that's no, morbid.
No, that's not what he says at all.
No, he says keep it up.
Keep your head up, son.
do what you love, ignore the rest.
Ah, fair enough. That's good advice. I like that advice. And that is why we do the show, because we love doing this show. Mm. So how's your week been?
I like to think of my father. I had met my father. He said, "Son, grow a beard, thick and full."
And you did.
Week's been good. Seen a lot of things, a lot of tidying. Had a landlord inspection that never happened, but that's the flat, spotless.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Well, we've basically been doing a lot of tidying and stuff as well, but ours is for a completely different reason, because last week we talked about the fact that we're being kicked out of our house. So it's been a week of house hunting and trying to find a new premises.
You shouldn't have tried to raise a llama farm here.
You don't need a skyscraper.
Can I make that? Can I make this point very clear?
That homemade not... skylight was right out.
McVeigh Towers.
Can I make this point very clear? We weren't kicked out because we did anything wrong. We are being kicked out because he wants to move back into his house. And what I would love to say, though, is a cute, funny story, is the fact that he comes here with his wife to tell us the news that we're being kicked out, and his wife goes, "Oh, I love what you've done back here." And all I can think is, "Thank you, so we could give you advice on how to set up your house."
Now, let's get some voodoo people in here and, like, put some things down.
Curse
like,
the we house. Should
write messages on the walls and then paint them over.
Oh, so, there you go.
You know,
yeah.
When they come to, like, re-strip it they'll down, go, what they'll does find this mean? These messages. Yeah. You should block off certain areas so there's a room there.
And they'll go, "I'm sure there used to be a room here."
Yeah. So they knock the wall down. There's, like, all these candles, like, half melted, a stairwell.
And behind
that's
it,
awesome.
They told us when they did a podcast in here.
It'll just say behindthepanels.net.
It'll be me standing there looking in the corner.
What we do is we wall off the studio so it doesn't look like it's part of the house, put an entrance in over here, and we just keep doing the podcast here.
And people go, "We swear we can hear voices coming from inside."
We keep
the
hearing
house.
Laughing. I don't know what it's from.
And really unsubtle plugging for behindthepanels.net.
Oh, dear.
They keep
God.
Saying it's the best comic book podcast on there.
I keep finding myself wanting to go to behindthepanels.net for no apparent reason.
And how many times can we mention behindthepanels.net on this show? Is what I would like to know.
You know what I really like? Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut. It's so much better than Domino's.
This I say that drinking my lightly Waterford sparkling water.
And my Dr. Pepper.
This show, not endorsed by any of these products.
I think it's time for a quick ad break.
Oh, the time is now, the time is here. Now's the time for a bite of cheer. A tasty light where the price is right. Well, look here, you'll dig the sight. The moment's handy for a piece of candy. Just name your brand, they're all so grand. Hey, what do you think of an ice cool drink? Or a big box filled with a popcorn thrill? Let your taste buds meet with an ice cream treat. Refresh yourselves, it's time to eat. So come on, folks, let's join the band as we all head for the refreshment stand.
Oh, fuck that. Didn't she sound exactly like she had small hands?
Oh, she did. Looking for a date, are you, Longo?
All the better to see you in.
No, I'm too busy remodeling your house.
All right, shall we actually talk about something entertainment related this week?
Okay, let's talk about what we've been watching.
All right.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
Now, she had small hands.
I'll kick us off by saying that last week I was talking about the fact that we're rounding up the TV series. This week I went and I binge-watched the Michael J. Fox show to catch up on that one. And I'm not overly enthused by it.
A little bit shaky?
A little bit shaky. Oh, it's terrible. There are some great lines. There's some great moments where it's self-referential. Like, there's actually one point where the wife says, sit perfectly still, and he goes, you do know who you're talking to, you know? And stuff like that. There's some moments like that, and there's actually one great episode where they clear out the child's room of old toys, and they leave a whole bunch of stuff. They're just like picking out the bits and pieces from his room, and she goes, he never plays with this stuff. He'll never even notice it's gone. And they walk out the room, and the kid walks back in the room and just goes, where's my stuff? And then she has this lovely talk with him where she says, we don't need to keep stuff you don't use. And he goes, I understand. And so for the rest of the episode, there's this lovely sight gag where no matter what's going on in the episode, he's in the background just taking things out of the house. Like, he just walks into the kitchen at one point, takes an appliance off the counter, goes, I've never seen this. And he just walks off with it. Mm. And he finally gets busted by the end of the episode dragging the exercise bike.
I gotta say, though, because I'm two episodes behind. I watched the show as well.
Oh, right, okay.
But, like, I love that little kid.
That kid
is
great.
I just think he's great. Yeah. Normally, I wouldn't, you know.
I say the kids are actually the best thing in it, I think.
The sister should really kind of go.
Yeah, she's kind of annoying. But there's been some poignant moments. And that's the thing. The reason why the series, I think, ultimately kind of fails is it's just that little bit too saccharinely sweet.
Because I like to call it the afterlife special.
You really expect the announcer to say, and now in this very special episode of the Michael J. Fox show, because it really is just that little bit sappy. Mm. In places, and they've stolen that whole motif from Modern Family where they'll talk to the camera at the end, and it's almost like the moral for today was, you know, family always comes through or whatever. And so you kind of look and go, if they didn't do that, if they just kind of stuck with the strengths that the cast could carry this and have a bit of fun with it, it might actually work better as a series. Overall, I don't think it's terrible, and it is fun. And compared to what else I watched this week, which was the pilot episode to the new Kirstie Alley sitcom called Kirstie, where basically her, Michael Richards, and Rhea Perlman, which you would think should be a killer combination, basically do classic three-camera videotaped in front of a live studio audience sitcom. So it's all set up and punchline, and it's just not funny. Mm-hmm. And so you sit there and go, well,
I was almost waiting for you to go, it's brilliant.
No, I would take Michael J. Fox show over that show.
Those are free sitcom.
Big, legends. Big hitters. Yeah, they're legends, and the show just falls flat.
Wow.
Which is kind of a shame. But so the Michael J. Fox show.
Did you know they made a Rob Schneider sitcom called Rob?
No, I didn't, and probably a good thing because I hate Rob Schneider. Yeah,
that's amazing.
I hate Rob Schneider.
It seems
anyway
to be a trend. It's just like, let's just call the show after the main actor.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was a big thing from the 70s and 80s.
Like the
it's
Bill
coming
Cosby
back.
Show, I guess.
Everybody loves Raymond.
Yeah. Except they didn't use his last name.
Cheers. He was
this whole
good
idea
he was
of like the Michael J. Fox show. It's almost like the Bob Newhart show.
It's true.
Know?
Yeah.
And it's like you sit there and go, the Dick Van Dyke show. And you go,
Seinfeld.
There you go.
I love Lucy.
I love Lucy. The Lucio Ball.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what I've been watching. Longo.
Walking Dead, which was amazing.
Which I still haven't watched.
No, we can't spoil.
We talked a lot about that on Behind the Panels.
Yep. Which you can find on behindthepanels.net.
I
went to the movies last night, actually. I went to watch a new film called The Spectacular Now.
I've got a double pass to this.
Oh, dude, you should really go. Yeah, it's kind of like a Good Will Hunting, but with high school students. You know,
now, this is the same writer as 500 Days of Summer.
Yes, well, from what my understanding of it. Yeah. The filmmaker, he's only made one film before, which is something called I'm Not a Hipster or I Am Still a Hipster.
And by saying it has made himself a hipster. Yeah,
yeah, so. Exactly. By saying I'm not a hipster, you are a hipster. But yeah, it was a sweet little film. Like, I went in expecting something more indie, something more art house, but it was a lot more mainstream.
Hmm.
Now, I can't remember if you mentioned this or not. You also saw Carrie, didn't you?
Yeah, I hated Carrie.
You hated it?
Yeah, did you guys see Carrie?
I haven't seen
no,
it yet.
I haven't seen the remake.
Yeah,
no.
I also watched Carrie. Carrie is an interesting one, too, though, because I'm a huge fan of the book.
Right.
And, like, hold the press, because I'm not the biggest fan of De Palma's movie. And I know that might be sort of...
Look, you know, I've got problems with that movie.
I like De Palma's movie back in the late 70s, early 80s.
This is the thing. Like,
I'm not a huge fan of it nowadays. Yeah. See, it's too slow.
I watched Brian De Palma's version of Carrie when I was very young. And of course, it's like, it's Carrie, it's great, you know, when you're young, whatever. You know, but then I read Stephen King's book, Carrie, which is something so much different than what De Palma made.
Mm.
At essence, it's like a metaphor for like female maturity and coming
and menstruation, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing. That's literally why it's there, right? But the new Carrie modernizes it, particularly with like cell phone footage and it.
Mm.
Look, put it this way. The one thing that really bothered me about the new Carrie is they take away all the religious fundamentalist aspect to Carrie's upbringing.
That sucks.
It's you wouldn't think it would happen, but they cast Julianne Moore and she has maybe like 5-10 minutes of screen time and there's no religious element.
Did she
get
naked? Because I don't think I've seen a Julianne Moore film that doesn't get naked.
No, she didn't. But see, this is the kind of thing. What they do with Julianne Moore's character is so weird. It's like she's a cutter in this. Like she cuts herself, like... to dull the pain of Carrie, and there's this,
been watching like Michael Haneke films. Yeah, and just like, let's throw a bit of piano teacher.
It's just not Carrie. It's like it's just it focuses more on the cheerleaders and the jocks than it does on Carrie herself.
Right,
Carrie's a non-entity. I mean, I could go on all day. It was really bad.
Oh, okay, you know, I was actually going to go see it. So I'm glad you've told me.
But
this.
To summarize it, well shot, well made, just really poorly executed. And I just want to say one thing about the ending is that the movie shares no relationship with the Stephen King book whatsoever, really, in my opinion, until the final scene of the movie, which is a scene that wasn't in De Palma's version, but which is how the book wraps up. And it was almost as if they were going, we're not going to follow the book at all, but we're going to leave you with a great piece from the book.
Right.
And that pissed me off so much.
So let me ask you this. Is the opening strong?
That's a really good opening scene, actually.
Okay, because what is it, that fundamental rule? They say open strong to get your audience in, close strong to bring them back. Sounds like they took this to a literal level.
because the problem is they try to remake De Palma's film. And that's what it comes across as.
Right.
Like, they're not looking at the book. They're just doing the film straight.
Okay, fair enough.
But with mobile phones and websites and...
Death of cinema, according to J.J. Abrams. Richard, what have you been watching this week?
I saw Frozen.
Disney
film.
Lucky bastard.
Yeah, look, it doesn't come out in Australia till Boxing Day, which is the 26th of December, for those of you outside the Commonwealth. it's already been out.
The rapidly shrinking Commonwealth.
Hey, where's the ABC going?
So it's us in Canada, really. With Mike, hi. the movie is terrific. It is a classic Disney film. It's like I read someone this week saying I'm hazarding to compare it to classic Disney films, but you kind of have to because it's a real hark back to that. It's a proper musical. It's like a proper Disney big musical comedy production, comedy drama production. It's based on the Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen. The songs are terrific. The characters are fantastic. I thought, like from the shorts, I thought that the character Josh Gad's character, the snowman, was going to be terrible because it's like, you know, Wozniak, it's a snowman.
Right.
But it's actually really good. It gives it, because in all of the Disney films, there's that one funny little character.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and
the hamster in Bolt.
Yeah, you got to have it for the kids because otherwise it's a pretty heavy film. It's about, you know, this, it opens in this almost Pixar-like fashion with like the sister who's got, found out she's got...
I'm sorry. The hand gestures, people, you can't see this because we're in a studio, but Richard's hand gestures were wonderful.
I can't talk without my hand. The sister finds out she's got like powers to freeze things. That's what I was doing. And she accidentally freezes, like hurts her younger sister. Doing so that she locks herself away from years, and they don't talk until they're both, you know, much older, and you know, right, she's about to become queen. So they've grown up never really knowing each other. And just as she's crowned queen, her powers sort of come into full blossom, and she puts the whole kingdom into eternal winter. So there's kind of really interesting dark dynamic there with the two of them, and she's got to go up the mountains and find her sister. But they keep it light, they keep it comedic. It's almost like somewhere between Beauty and the Beast and the musical, the stage musical Wicked, because it's got some really big, because you kind of get equal measure with both of the female leads.
Right, right.
And so, like, for anybody who's saying you can't have a strong movie with female leads. Like, Disney have been proving them wrong with their last three or four films. You've had Frozen, you've had Tangled,
Wreck-It Ralph.
You've had Wreck-It Ralph, you've had Brave. You know, these are all films that have had female, strong female leads in them, and they've all done really well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, screw you, Hollywood.
This I know you were happens. You were optimistic, but you were worried about Frozen. Yeah. So I'm glad that you...
No, look, I loved it. I actually would rank it up there with, like, proper old school Disney. Yeah. It feels like early 90s Disney.
Cool.
I'm so glad you say that too, because I remember when Tangled came out, the marketing advertising for Tangled looked awful.
Yeah.
And that movie is a sensation.
I love
and
Tangled.
Look really closely, there is a Easter egg cameo of the two leads from Tangled popping up in a ballroom sequence.
Oh, really?
So
oh,
it's cool, kind of cool. Like, it's in the same universe, they're kind of still there, they're married, and they're doing their thing in the corner.
That's cool.
So this sounds like a similar thing, I suppose, like very, bad marketing and then great film.
Bad marketing, very, but it's done well in the States. It's made almost $100 million, so it's doing quite well. So.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
I believe you've also been watching some TV.
I have been watching some TV. I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the show, but I've been marathoning Doctor Who. So it's time for my adventures through space and time.
Cool. BBC One. Now here's Doctor Who.
Said goodbye to a friend this week.
Oh, the speech impediment is gone.
It's gone, Joe.
but never forgotten.
A tear, Therajane. This is what he says as he goes out. Like this was Planet of the Spiders, which is an interesting serial in and of itself because it introduces other Time Lords and like a Tibetan guru, and it has a Tibetan performance that is worthy of Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. so it is kind of got that vibe going to it, but it's also Pertwee's departure and the introduction of Tom Baker.
Jelly Baby.
Because I've been walking around doing the scene from the end of Day of the Doctor, which I don't know if I can... Should I spoil? I don't know if I can spoil. We've already spoiled it on the other show.
Day of the Doctor was 2 weeks ago now?
2 weeks ago now.
That's it.
It's out on Blu-ray. And I've been walking around going, you know, I really think you might... You know, just randomly walking around, who knows? You know, just randomly doing Tom Baker impersonations because I'm now up to Tom Baker. Oh, hello.
Hello.
Someone's just sent me a picture. Not Susan has sent me a picture of Hello Kitty.
Oh, well, there you go.
Thank you, Batrock. there you go.
Live on air, people. Live on air.
We're going live to Hard Drive. But I was introduced to, I've started watching The Baker Years, and I was introduced to this funny old fellow this week.
There you are. Now come along, Doctor. You're supposed to be in the sick bay.
Am I? Don't you mean the infirmary?
No, I do not mean the infirmary. I mean the sick bay. You're not fit yet.
Not fit? I'm the doctor.
No, Doctor. I'm the doctor, and I say that you're not fit.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
Look here, Doctor. You're not fit.
Not fit. Of course I'm fit. All systems go.
Sir.
Look. Heartbeat?
I say, I don't think that could be right.
Both a bit fast, are they?
Well, I do.
Still, must be patient. A new body's like a new house. Takes a little bit of time to settle in. As for the physiognomy, well, nothing's perfect. Have to take the rough with the smooth. Mind you, I think the nose is a definite improvement.
And hey, you may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor.
The definite article, you would say. This week is so that's like he is the doctor as far as most people are concerned.
Yeah.
It's funny, that was the first episode, and he says, but I am the doctor. And Tom Baker to this day, often when someone else refers to the doctor, he goes, but you must be mistaken, I'm the doctor.
Mm.
Because he says that he didn't take on the role. The doctor had been there the whole time and he found him.
Yeah.
You know, and he said everything he's done since has been hard because nothing compares to playing the doctor.
And he played it for so long.
7 years he played the doctor for. And he was the longest running doctor. Wasn't in as many episodes as William Hartnell. But because they did more episodes in those days. But he ran for ages and he's the most iconic one. He's the one most people recognize.
He's my doctor.
He's your doctor. But it's great. So from that very first episode, he comes in like a bolt of lightning and...
A little bit like Tennant did.
Yeah.
Tennant came in like a bolt of lightning too. Yeah.
Because
you know,
so. That thing, he's running around, he's going, all systems go, and he's running up and down on the spot and running around and checking his face in the mirror.
Heart speed.
That whole thing, a lot of the stuff that's really common now in the current one, where it's like, oh, sideburns, ears, nose, throat, all that stuff. He was the one that kind of brought that all in with the kind of really frantically checking around, running around. And for the first couple of episodes, he's mad as a box full of badges.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember him being completely insane for the first, because it was almost like it didn't take properly.
Yeah.
And it was all over the place.
Because they actually said in the previous episode, he may be a little erratic when he comes back. And that was kind of laying the groundwork for Tom Beck. I don't think they knew what they were letting out of the genie bottle at that stage. But there you go. And so I'm definitely in a very high point for the
season. Well, let me know when you hit the Teela years, okay? Because Teela.
Oh, Leela.
Yeah. Sorry,
running around in her
loincloth.
Yeah. Loincloth.
Yeah. in her skins.
But that's my adventures in time and space for the week.
Fantastic. I actually kind of, there's part of me that is really envious of what you're doing. I just don't have the time at the moment to do something.
Time.
381
episodes down, I think, about 418 to go. Not counting the Christmas special, which is only a couple of weeks away now.
Yeah,
you're almost exciting. Halfway.
I'm almost halfway, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I should be done by... I think I've worked it out at April, May, if I go at the current rate, which will be well in time for when Capaldi kicks off in late August, I think.
Yeah.
But when I get up to the modern stuff, I'm actually going to watch them properly in order, cutting up with Torchwood and Sarah Jane stuff as well.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Yeah. I quite like Sarah Jane. It's very lightweight, but I like Sarah.
It's funny because Doctor Who was the family show. Torchwood was for adults, targeted, and Sarah Jane was for kids.
Yes.
So you kind of got a nice sort of balance between the three of them.
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's talk a little bit about the week and things that have happened during the week.
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
Not really. But I think we should, at this point, put out a bit of a condolence saying that Paul Walker died this week.
Yeah, like this literally happened when we were leaving the studio last week.
Yeah, and really ironically in a car
I literally
accident.
Got into my car and I had a message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I dropped you off. And I was backing out of your driveway when you texted me. So I was like, oh my God, this has just happened.
And the really tragic thing, it's been coming out that he didn't die on impact. He died sort of in the blaze afterwards.
Really?
Which was, you know, I mean, horrific news to hear. From what we understand, obviously production on Fast and Furious 7 is halted. Mm. And they're actually considering scrapping the whole thing and starting from the beginning. Because at the moment, none of them can consider going back to work.
I kind of look at it and go, I think Fast and Furious should just stop at this point.
Yeah, because they've actually got, I mean, on a completely story point of view, they have an ending now. They've brought it up to the point where Tokyo Drift starts.
Yeah.
So they could end it.
And they could. And there is that cliffhanger at the end with, you know, bringing in Statham. You know, no spoilers here. But the film's been out for ages. But
that's really just revealing who the killer was.
That's right. Yeah. And it's like, you could just say, let's finish this right now. Paul Walker is integral to the plot. I don't think he's a brilliant actor or anything, but he was integral.
And he's never had any success outside those
films. No, and he is the only one, with the exception of Tokyo Drift, but he's the only one that was in all of them because Vin Diesel left. You know? So... I say it's a bit of a sad thing that's actually happened here. I mean, and as I say, all humor aside, very ironic that it was a car crash. I mean, it's just, if you look up ironic in the dictionary, this is what you're going to find.
Well, apparently...
And he wasn't even driving.
No, he wasn't driving. He was a passenger.
But the thing was, he was a self-confessed adrenaline junkie outside of the thing. So, look, you know, people leave fast lives. They're going to, you know, maybe pay the consequences at some stage. And unfortunately, this was someone at the peak of his career who did so. So... Our thoughts go out to, you know, friends and family of Paul Walker. 15-year-old
daughter.
And as film fans, we lose a big star in the community.
Absolutely. What else we got this week? Anything else happened this week?
Oh, Mandela died.
Mandela died? Oh,
yeah.
No.
We are going to get mail for
that. I'm joking. Question is, was he in the car? No, I'm sorry. I'm joking.
I'm going to walk away.
I'm going to get mail from just laughing at that.
All right, no, look.
I want it on record that I do not condone the speech of David McVeigh. I'm just here for the...
I'm sorry, too
it's
soon?
It's a pretty big deal.
This is a massive deal. Not really entertainment related.
No, well,
but
it is, because there's a few Mandela films that
there's been a few.
Literally, apparently his...
And to be
off
color one more time, at least they have an ending there. Oh, I'm sorry. God, it just
woo!
It's it's too easy a target. Oh,
David, you're being far too fast and far too furious.
Oh!
Let's just take a long walk to freedom.
Now, we do specify that this show, you know, is doing things wrong.
we did say we will do wrong.
Yeah, we would do wrong, and that most of it's me. Look, I know.
And I'm just desperately trying to cover up. I'm like a cat trying to hide its shame under the litter box, you know.
Yeah, with the story you've got coming up.
Yeah.
Look, no, all kidding aside, Nelson Mandela passing is a monumental. Monumental thing. I mean, this is a man who changed the face of a country.
I think the Onion ran the headline, first politician to die that we'll miss.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because this is someone who, as you said, you mentioned a couple of films out at the moment, but he has been, you know, instrumental in changing, you know, culture and attitudes over the last decades, you know, and this is someone that all of us growing up were aware of the apartheid in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And
I remember apartheid like it was yesterday.
As to why, and it's so difficult to understand what it was about, you know, as a child, you know, sort of going, why? You know, why does that exist over there?
I remember my mother coming in and saying, we're boycotting Shell, we're boycotting, you know, all these things that were, because the businesses were still in South Africa and still supporting South Africa. And I remember all of these things and not really understanding all of the politics, but as I got older, having Mandela coming out and having him become a president of South Africa, you know, having him change the face of that country, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were getting movies like what was the
Cry Freedom and
Cry Freedom, but no, there was the one with Invictus. Marlon Brando, where he's on trial. There's a trial. Donald Sutherland. Dry White Season. Right. Dry White Season came out. Cry Freedom came out, and all
that
these,
was about Stephen Biko, wasn't it?
That I was Cry so. Freedom. That was Cry Freedom. Yeah. And so basically, all these films about the atrocities of South Africa, and you sit there and go. All, and even Lethal Weapon 2 was heavily, you know, about the apartheid movement and everything else. And to have, from that period of time to now, a country completely transformed is a remarkable thing. It's something that we don't see often.
I mean, look, you know, there's obviously still problems in Africa and, you know, you can't get rid of something, you know, basically institutionalized racism so close to it. I mean, look, you know.
Oh, well, we have to wait until a couple of generations pass.
I mean, look, you see the same thing in the Deep South in America. Mm. You know, there was segregation right up until the 60s and 70s. Yes. You know, you can't get rid of that overnight, but people like Mandela helped usher in a new era.
Yes.
And for that, as you know, and I firmly believe that, you know, there are guiding principles. Humanity does progress, you know, and that we all, look, we're all science fiction fans. We all look and hope to a future where...
The utopian future
that doesn't exist anywhere except in fiction at the moment. But people like Mandela are kind of making a little small part of that happen now.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think we all have... As humans, we all have him to thank for...
Absolutely.
...being an inspiration.
And I was making off-color jokes. But really, realistically, no, it's a very, very sad passing. Mm. But I'm really glad this man lived. And I'm really glad that... I mean, this is going to sound really weird. I don't mean this to sound glib. But I'm really glad that he had to go through what he went through so that he could become the man that he became... who could change that country. And I think it's an amazing story.
Which is why it frustrates me that when you hear modern conservative politicians talking about, oh, we can get rid of those anti-vilification laws or whatever because racism's over now. No, it's not over. It's only as soon as we forget the people who have fought to end racism, regardless of what country it is, whether it's South Africa, the United States of America or Australia, and yes, we have a very racist past. As soon as you forget that fact and as soon as you start glibly labelling them as using political terms like illegal entrants rather than, or boat people rather than what they are, refugees or whatever the issue is, you know, as soon as you start using those things and discriminating them as the other, we're on a path towards South Africa during the apartheid years.
It's a really amazing thing you bring up the boat people and stuff like that because you've got to think about it and think this country is built on immigrants, you know, and so to suddenly turn around and say, oh, we can't take any of these
criminal immigrants,
and we sit there and look at it and the way we're treating refugees at the moment is terrible.
Abominable.
It's abominable.
Yeah.
This country was founded on the idea.
You look at people like Mandela who have advanced the human condition. Mm. And I don't use that term flippantly.
But this is a real term.
Real term. Yeah. Actually advancing the way we think as people. And that's what we happen. You know, we don't think the same way that we did 500 years ago. You know, we think differently now. We're hardwired differently now. We're better people than we were. And I say that, you know, knowing full well in 500 years' time, they're going to look back and go, did they have so little to hate that they were picking on homosexuals and blacks back then? You know, is that the people will look back at our era and label us as backward thinking in 500 years from now?
Of course they will.
But, you know, knowing full well that our... And, you know, maybe this podcast will survive as a time capsule. Who knows? But knowing full well that we have advanced as a people in that time, you know, it hurts me to think that there are people who still think that, you know, we have to go backwards to go forward.
And for anybody who's listening out there, and for anybody out there who's listening right now saying, get back to being funny, you guys. Don't do the politics stuff. Fuck you. It's our podcast.
Yeah. Sorry for bringing that up, but you got to understand.
No, I think it is an important part.
It's so momentous.
I think it is. I think we have to mark things like this because, hey, we're humans.
I think it should be very clearly noted. The Geek Movie Club is here as a platform for us to talk about.
It's our clubhouse.
It's our clubhouse. And sometimes we're going to get serious. Sometimes we're going to be flippant. Sometimes we're going to say stuff that's off color, but that's okay.
And then sometimes we desperately scramble to put meaning back into it because we've said something off color.
I'd never do that.
That's what I've been doing for the last 5 years.
Don't worry, we're moving into something soon.
But can I say that I think this is a really great segue now to talk about vaginal knitting?
I think so.
Because last week we mentioned that vaginal knitting. We've done some big, important topics on the show. We just spoke about Mandela.
Orgasm Wars.
What was that? We've Orgasm spoken Wars. About probably the finest television show of the year, which
absolutely.
Is Orgasm Wars, in which a gay man tries to bring a straight porn star to orgasm.
See episode 2, guys.
See episode 2, entitled Orgasm Wars. Last week we mentioned briefly that we'd investigate vaginal knitting for this week, and I went off and had a look. This was a story that was breaking last week, breaking news last week. It's now had about 3 million hits on YouTube because it's been covered by people like the Huffington Post in the last couple of days. So let's just... is this on, Dave?
This is on, yep.
Yep. So let's just have a quick listen to... I'm going to introduce you to a SBS news... an SBS sort of insight story, the feed story that was on this week, about a new artist / activist who's doing something rather interesting with wool.
My name's Casey Jenkins. I'm a performer craftivist from Melbourne, and I'm up in Darwin doing a performance piece called Casting Off My Womb. I'm spending 28 days knitting from wool that I've inserted in my vagina. Every day I take a new skein of wool that's been wound so that it will unravel from the centre, and I stick it up inside me, and then I pull out the thread and then knit. It's
like
unusual.
An ad for Dove chocolate or something.
To this knitting, so I can't sort of get off and wander around, and so it really is restrictive. But no, it's not painful. I mean, people push babies.
I'm just going to skip through a little bit here.
It wouldn't be the performance if I were going to cut out my menstrual cycle from it. For starters, when I'm menstruating, it makes knitting a hell of a lot harder, because the wool is wet and so you have to kind of yank at it. It's sort of slightly uncomfortable sometimes, arousing sometimes. When I'm sitting in the gallery knitting, I get a lot of the reaction is people say, you're so brave.
That's Peter Capaldi's new scarf, right?
I've got no words for this. I think my favorite comment was like, well, she's thinking outside the box.
she doesn't have any words for it herself. She's very ineloquent.
I know. She's like, look, this is, I love.
This is performance art gone nuts.
Right. Look, people, I do spend a bit of time in galleries. I do love modern art. I do love contemporary art. I do go and look at installations. Sometimes I have no idea what they're doing, but I really appreciate it. But then there are those times you go into the MCA and you go up to a wall and you pull back a little curtain and there's a tiny TV screen with a picture of, you know, I don't know, an elf penis or something. And you think to yourself, yeah, I think that grant could have been better spent.
Yeah, I did 3 years of art school. I know what you're
feeling. 3 years, yeah.
I've seen worse than this.
But. You know, but I mean, this to me, this is... I want to use a phrase I'm not going to be able to use. The first word is stunt. But it
just sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Look, it's just, I don't know, the whole thing, it's like her justification for it is like, I don't want to. People tend to think of the vagina and the vulva as something revolting, and I'm just trying to make it elegant and beautiful again. But this is really this kind of branch of feminism that I've never fully agreed with, which is like, people assume that female genitalia is ugly. I've never thought that.
I've never thought that either.
And there's this kind of thing that,
yeah. I think it would be kind of unattractive with a ball of wool
sticking
up
out of it. You know,
the term that we used to hear a lot in art school was axe wound.
Axe wound.
That's how they talk about it.
And it's kind of like, you know, you know if you're art students, you talk this way. And it's kind of like the, and I've got nothing. I mean, look, this is a very specific branch of this thinking. And there's filmmakers like Catherine Brillat, and you know her, who does, she does a lot of very intense, very graphic shock films. Ooh. And she did this film once. And God, I've forgotten the name off the top of my head. But there's a movie where she does actually play the whole of the time. There's this gay man in this kind of therapy thing. She's trying to work out why he's gay. And she kind of basically implies in this film that he was so revolted by female genitalia as when he was younger that that's kind of the path that he went down on. So two things that were wrong with that. One, it was a branch of, thinking that said, oh yeah, he's gay because he doesn't like women,
right?
Which is wrong. People know if you are gay, it's because you love people of your same gender, not because you hate the other gender.
Yeah.
The other line of thinking is that, you know, again, it's starting from the point that for some reason, you know, people find genitalia disgusting. I'll go out and say I found male genitalia disgusting. It's an ugly set of equipment, people.
Look, like this.
We didn't luck out in the gene pool.
This big floppy thing that hangs.
Well,
there.
I don't know about yours. Mine's a small floppy thing.
No, seriously, in all fairness, like, well, no, it's not fair at all. You know, like, this kind of shit sets feminism back years.
I tend to agree. It knits feminism back. this kind of knit. she's a nitwit.
I just look at it and go...
I think we're all advocates for feminism.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, well, look, like, you know, you can't not
be. I was raised by a feminist single mother. Yeah. So
this,
I mean,
kind of shit says that... Just closes that aesthetic difference.
This is performance and installation art gone insane.
Look, I respect performance and installation art. I respect feminism. I don't like them both being used as stunts for your own career and then... because you've made the assumption that of the way that the majority of people think because they don't think that way.
Mm.
There might be people who do find vaginas disgusting. I'm sure there are people who find pinky toes disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a subset of people. That is not groupthink.
But also, yeah, her sitting on a bench without... Granted, she's
in
not
Darwin.
Granted, she's not wearing pants, look, but I've she's just to, sitting on a bench.
I've been to Darwin in summer. You want to take your pants off.
Yeah,
you
fair know. Enough.
Sorry, I've actually does she been there
this,
in spring.
Does she do this in the performance space?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, she just sits there knitting in the gallery. My point is, though, that she's so not really telling us that the vagina is any more attractive, because what we're seeing is this wet wool producing from between her legs.
But that's the very important difference, though. Is the artwork the performance itself, or is the artwork what she produces?
Well, she's just producing one long scarf, so...
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing. Is it a performance piece, or is she creating an actual work?
Well, her argument starts from the fact that...
It's wanky, but it's...
People find the vulva disgusting, therefore I'm going to create something beautiful out of it, something delicate out of it. It's like... But... what if you think that the vulva is beautiful and delicate? So you're just pulling wool out of it now.
Yeah, and all you're doing is making it unattractive to me because you're stuffing a bowl of wool up yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't...
Yeah, exactly.
It just looks like a very long tampon string. You know, it's like... It doesn't... This sort of art does nothing for me.
No, it is... I've noticed that... would have liked to read out some of the comments here, but comments have been disabled on this video.
Yeah, of course they have.
Of course, because everybody's going to be mocking her.
Yeah. You know, there'll be... You know, but there's always the standard comments that'll be on there. Which will be, you know, she's hot,
all that kind of,
you know.
I saw her pubic hair.
You know, Ron Paul, 2016. You know,
first.
I stole that from Stephen Colbert, but it's
and you'll see about,
that was brilliant.
And you'll see about, and you'll see about 15 in a row that just say first.
Yeah, yeah.
Second.
Oh dear.
So yes,
that was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. I just think it's how
I wanna
earnest
see her,
she is about the whole
thing. I want to see her cross over with Orgasm Wars.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, if she did that in front of the straight guy, he probably never would blow.
Yeah. No, what she has to... What
he He'd
has
be
to,
like, vulvas are disgusting,
he
man.
Has to... she brings a gay man to orgasm by knitting from her vagina. That
there
would,
you go.
That would be the
that
challenge.
That would be the way to go. Know? That would be the way to go. Well...
Iron Chef.
So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls...
If you're in Darwin, you can go see vaginal knitting, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. I haven't looked this up, but I'm sure if you... her name is Casey Jenkins. Go to casey-jenkins.com.
Did you say hymen?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Exact same joke. Yeah.
I took the higher ground.
I rely on you to take the higher ground. You know that, don't you?
going to the Casey Jenkins website here.
What is she selling, man?
Let's see what she's... Her recent project is Casting Off My Womb.
Oh my god.
go away, audience. stills and text there. Let me see what else you got. We've got Craft Cartel, where they've made dynamite out of wool. I don't know where the wool's from.
That dude knitted it. They, he's awesome.
Oh, look, she's made little vaginas.
Oh, she's made, and it's called, can we use that word?
Sure, go ahead.
She's made something called cunt fling-ups.
All right.
Which she's got on display there. And finally, the Femme Fight Club, which looks like...
They're fighting with Jell-O by the looks of
it. Yeah, so that looks slightly more interesting than vaginal knitting.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's Casey... -Jenkins.
Do you reckon this thing is like, you know, the thousand origami like birds? Do you reckon it's like she just keeps knitting that? Just
Well, it's getting pretty long, and yeah. there's
like
several...
maybe she's got to knit 1,000 feet of it, like to make a wish. Or like,
judging by the discolor.
I was thinking you could call it cunt rope or something.
Judging by the discolorations on that long thing, you can see how many months she's been doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of disturbing.
My question is,
is she worried about toxic shock syndrome? That's what I want to know.
If we should email
like a tree, you could tell her.
We could email her at...
Thank you, Richard.
Oh, dear. We could email her at casey@craftcartel.com.
Dear Casey, and you I'm can very ask upset. Her, but...
And you can ask her whether she's worried about toxic shock.
So,
have you read The Second Sex?
That happened this week.
That did happen this week. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I feel as though it's time. Mr. Longo, have you got a quiz ready for us?
I do.
I think it's time.
Do we have a theme?
We do. I think it's time for Dave's movie quiz. Oh, you know what it's time for? For some reason, my...
You need to plug in better.
I'm in as far as it'll go.
All right, go.
Hey.
Pop quiz, hotshot. There's a bomb on a bus. Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Well, all right, as fast as we can.
Okay, today's quiz is on asshole knitting.
We shove the ball up our ass, go for it from there.
And walk around for a while, see how
and
it feels.
We use a knitting needle and our cock for doing the actual knitting.
No, it'd have to be two of us.
All right, we just made an enemy out of Casey Jenkins. All right.
We should get her on and do it live.
Casey's in the studio today, boys. All right, today's quiz is a good one. I'm really proud of this one.
All right, let's do it.
It's a quiz for Back to the Future.
Oh,
part
God,
one.
I'm going to be hopeless at this.
I'm going to stand out of this one. Richard's got this.
Okay, I made this myself from clips from the movie.
All right.
Okay, never seen it.
It's a little known film. So we're going to do the first question. Doc built a time machine out of what?
A DeLorean?
The way I see it. Oh.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine, you may as well do it.
All right, here we go.
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Besides, the stainless steel construction of the Flex is personal. Look out!
Richard's going to own this. The second question is, what is the DeLorean powered by?
Well, the car itself runs on standard gasoline, but plutonium in the first film.
Plutonium, yes. Mm.
Well, that's...
I also would have accepted nuclear.
This is heavy duty, Doc. This is great. Does it run like on regular unleaded gasoline?
Unfortunately, no. It requires something with a little more kick. Plutonium.
Plutonium. Wait a minute.
You mean this sucker's nuclear?
Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
No. Keep rolling. Keep rolling. This sucker's electrical. But to generate the... Oh, no, that's probably a future question.
Yeah, we'll say it. Yeah.
How did Doc Brown acquire the plutonium and off of who?
The Libyans!
Doc, you don't just walk into a store and buy plutonium. Did you rip that off?
We'll do a bonus question. What did he give the Libyans?
Pinball machine parts.
A box of old pinball machine parts.
Of course, from a group of Libyan nationalists. They wanted me to build them a bomb, so I took their plutonium and in turn gave them a shiny bomb casing full of used pinball machine parts.
Bomb casing.
Now, this quiz is just an excuse for us to relive that film.
What film? I've never seen it.
Okay, how fast does the DeLorean need to go in order to travel?
80 miles an hour!
And a bonus question, what will you see?
Some serious shit!
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Okay.
And my calculations, when Casey Jones...
You said Casey Jones! It's Casey Jenkins!
When Casey Jenkins hits 88 feet per hour, you're gonna see some... You're going to see some serious nit.
Okay, how many gigawatts of electricity do you need?
1.21!
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts!
And one more.
Great Scott!
Is the next question about what can generate?
Yes! Are you reading my questions, Richard?
Lightning.
A bomb of lightning.
Marty, I'm sorry. But the only
but unfortunately, you never know when one is coming in.
1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, never know when one's going to hit. Long. We do now.
What does Principal Strickland call Marty that he once called George McFly?
Slacker?
Slacker, yeah.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker. You remind me of your father when he went here. He was a slacker, too.
Yeah, okay. Well, history's going to change.
Marty's biggest problem is that he's being erased, but from where?
The photo?
The photo, yeah.
From where?
History?
History, yeah. Oh, you mean this is a line, isn't it,
yep.
From the film? Damn it, wow.
Oh, God, he's got me. Go Stomped for it. Him.
What's the line?
His head's gone. It's like it's been erased.
Erased from existence.
Great line. Okay, Biff tells Marty to make a tree and what?
Get out of here.
Why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
Bonus question, how do you say it properly?
Make like a tree.
Leave.
Okay, here we go. It starts with audio.
All right, this is an oldie, but... Well, it's an oldie where I come from.
What's the song?
Johnny's the oldie.
Chuck, it's Marvin.
It's your cousin Marvin Berry.
There you go.
There you go.
Where's your little bit? Let's go.
I don't know how many times I played that as a kid.
Oh man. Okay, where we're going, we don't need
roads.
Hey Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads. Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Okay, so...
They did when that landed, but anyway.
One of my favorite lines from Back to the Future, of course, is he goes, do you know what this means? It means this damn thing doesn't work at all!
Yes, future boy!
When we're going to go out on the Back to the Future theme song...
We are.
Bonus questions, you guys, who composed?
Alan Silvestri.
Beat me to it, man. Yeah. Name another film composed by Alan Silvestri.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
Darkman.
How about X-Men? No, that's Cayman. That's Cayman, sorry. Use of Forrest Gump.
Darkman.
Darkman. No, Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman, dude. Silvestri wrote a lot of music. Silvestri did Predator.
Finally, we had some sort of internet.
Of course.
Yeah, he did Predator. He did a huge force.
Romancing the Stone.
Contact.
Flight of the Navigator. Flight That's of the a Navigator. Brilliant score. Yeah. I was named after.
He was
that
a
movie.
Real John Williams protege.
He did Young Guns 2, apparently.
Oh, well, incidental score.
Yeah. The rest of it was John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, pretty much.
Of course, there were two Huey Lewis and the News songs in Back to the Future.
Absolutely.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes. I think he's actually done, if you go back...
He's done every Zemeckis film. Yeah. He did Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, or the Avatar prequel, if you prefer.
Yes.
Dinah. There you go.
Oh, there you go. He's been kicking
the
around
Bodyguard.
For a while.
Bodyguard.
What was his most recent?
I'll have to get to the end.
Oh, Avengers. He did the Avengers.
Avengers, yes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And Captain America.
Well, actually, yeah, he did his three most recent are Flight, The Croods, and Red 2. But he did the A-Team. In the 2010s, he's done the A-Team, Captain America, Avengers, Flight, The Croods, and Red 2.
There you go.
So Red 2 is his most recent.
I got to see Red 2. I still haven't seen it
it's
yet.
Fun. It's fun.
I really want to see it. We got to get out of here, guys, because A, the temperature is rising in the studio so high. I'm starting to sweat myself to death
raining.
Here. I'm raining.
It's raining, man.
And besides, I've got to go see some more vaginal nudity here.
You can't even say it. You're so excited.
I'm so excited to go watch it. Where can we find more of you guys on the internet? Does anybody want to find more?
You can find me at...
Jenny Collins. What is it?
Casey-Hyman-Jenkins.com.
you can find us at KennyJenkins at... What was it? At Gmail.
If you want to send us any feedback, send it to Casey at...
JenkinArt.com. Whatever it was.
Rewind slightly. And that would have been really funny if we'd remembered what it
was.
Yeah,
that's right.
But we're too busy knitting stuff from our... Knitting our pubic hairs together.
Anal knitting.
No, we're all just sewing our various pubic hairs together. It's sort of daisy chaining it or something. I don't know.
That would be awkward.
Yeah.
That would be awkward. You can find more of me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh.
Richard.
Oh. now that we're all joined at the hip, you can find me on the Twitter.
No, let's do each other's.
Okay. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Longo or on damngoodcup.com.
You can find him at therealbits.com. Is that .com? It is .com, right?
Yeah.
And DVD bits on Twitter.
It shows you how often you go to his site.
No, I just clicked the link, man. The picture on my own site's got the fucking real...
I know, we've all got links to each other on each other's site. I don't need to remember anything.
Can I also point out one little factoid before we leave the studio today, which is we've just managed to do 3 shows in 3 weeks, which has got to be a record for us.
Yay!
I think that's time for a bit of that.
All right, and on that note, we are going to get out of here with a little bit of Alan Silvestri's magnificent music. Goodbye, I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David Longo.
And we'll see you all next week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Movie Club, episode 5, the podcast that... Start again.